Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashland Dave, and I'm recording live from my podcast studio in Ashland, Virginia. Thanks for coming along.
Thank you very much. Here you go. Here are our menus, sir, madam.
Is this all you have?
We can't eat any of this. We have diverticulitis.
Couldn't you make us some macaroni?
And cheese.
This is a French restaurant, sir. I don't think...
But we have diverticulitis.
And that's Doug and Wendy Weiner from Saturday Night Live talking about diverticulitis. I'll talk a little bit more about that later in the podcast, but let's get the show started. And this is Ashland Dave, and this is Running in the Center of the Universe podcast, episode 220. It's the week of January 11th. I'd like to thank you for coming along. Coming at you from Ashland, Virginia, Central Virginia, the center of the universe. And if it's your first time listening to the show, I'd like to welcome you and thank you for downloading the show off the website or through iTunes or however you found it. This should be a pretty good episode for you to kind of get an idea of what the podcast is about. It's going to be called Happy DNF. And if you don't know what DNF stands for, then you've never DNF'd, that's for sure. DNF stands for did not finish, do not finish, did not finish, however, whatever you want to say. And I had a DNF this past weekend, and I'm going to talk about that in this episode. And if you're a returning listener, I'd like to thank you for coming back, giving the show another chance, and especially all you loyal listeners out there. You will find, I think, this will be a very humbling show for me because I've never had a DNF before. I've run 28 marathons, including, I think, about 10 or 11 ultras in there. And I've never walked off the course. And it's not really a pride thing. It just hadn't happened to me yet. I knew it was going to happen someday. I did not expect it to happen this past weekend at the Willis River 50K, but it did. And it happened to me kind of early. And as I go through the show, I'm going to kind of do some self-reflection on the experience. And I do know that I've learned from it. I always want to learn from any failures that I have, and certainly the Willis River 50K was. But let me back up a little bit and explain a little bit about the event itself. It wasn't technically a race, and I'm not even sure if it would have counted for someone who was going for an official result for Marathon Maniacs qualification or something along those lines. It was a fat ass event, and if you don't know what a fat ass event is, it's a most commonly viewed and understood to be a glorified group run. Usually these types of runs have the motto, no fees, no aids, no aid, no awards, no wimps. And for the most part, they're exactly that. They're free. They have little to no aid. They don't offer any rewards. It's not even considered a race because there's not really a winner. But generally the results are posted either through an email or maybe to a group run board or something like that. And the reason the times are kind of kept track of is to keep track of everybody that's out there on the course. And that's what was done on January 10th out in Cumberland State Forest, specifically Bear Creek Lake State Park, which is where the Willis River 50K was. This event started, it used to be sponsored by the Richmond Road Runners, which is the area running club. Ashland is just about 15 miles north of Richmond, kind of between Fredericksburg, Virginia, Richmond, Virginia, south of Washington, D.C. And the Richmond Roadrunners is the main running club in the Richmond metropolitan area. And they have been, this club, it's been a club-produced race since 2000. It used to be called the Swinging Bridge 50K/35K. And I've actually done it twice, actually. I for some reason, I thought I'd only done it once, but I did the 35K one time, which is, you know, just I think right close at 20 miles. And then in 2009, I actually did the 50K. And so it's two routes. One is the Cumberland Multi-Use Trail that moves into the Willis River Trail. You do that. It's an out and back of 10 miles, plus or minus. And then you do the Bear Creek Lake 10-miler route, which is a 5 miles plus or minus out and back, and that brings you back to the parking lot start-finish area. Well, I went into this whole okay, so this thing was held since 2000, and this year was the first year that it was no longer sponsored by Richmond Roadrunners, and a guy named Barry decided to continue to, Barry and Kevin, who kind of put the trail races on over the years, decided to make it fat ass style, and I signed up for that. I mean, I sent the guy an email and said I'd be there. You didn't have to commit to either distance because they both start and finish at the same place. The 50K just has another 15 kilometers that goes out and back. But he wanted to keep track of everybody, and there was some aid. He asked for people to donate stuff, so we brought. I went up with Ashley and Tom, and we brought stuff and for the tables that were going to be set up at some of the different points along the route. So it was in the tradition of fat ass style, but it was not with no aid at all. And which is really one of the biggest mistakes I made was just a really planned, really kind of piss poor for this whole thing. The course is all trail. It's a technical single track, some a hard packed road in the park, which maybe amounts to about a half mile all told, maybe a mile of the whole thing. Multiple creek crossings where you're below ankle deep or deeper than ankle deep, and lots of mud with mud puddles that you just can't avoid. Again, ankle deep and deeper than ankle deep. And I knew that going in because I'd run this before. This was my first ultra back in 2009. I did the 50K, and it was muddy. But back then, well, let me take it back. It wasn't muddy back then. It was all frozen, except for the creek crossings. Because the temperature was so low, below freezing, it was -1 at the Fahrenheit at the start. And I know I've said this before. There was really no mud. It was just the water. Even the water was frozen over. But by the time I got to the river crossings / creek crossings, large creeks, very small rivers, you know, all the ice was broken up because I certainly wasn't in the lead. So I had to go through the water. I remember my shoelaces got frozen shut, and I couldn't get my shoes off to do a sock change. I had to yank them off. But that was a long time ago before I learned a lot of different things, which unfortunately didn't really help me that much this past weekend. So the reason I call it Happy DNF is because I remember another podcaster named Dirt Dog, Mike Croy, who lives up in the Metro Detroit area, who's an ultra runner. Had a DNF one time, and he had a podcast called Happy DNF with the exclamation mark. So I'm copying him. I think he kind of learned from that as well, and that's what I'm hoping to do. But let me back up before and go way back to the week before the run, which was actually 2 weeks before the run. I actually had a bout of diverticulitis, which if you never had that, it was pretty brutal. And I missed a couple training runs. Oh, by the way, I have a whole host of excuses for why I was a DNF. So a lot of those will come out during the course of this podcast. And I've got some pretty good ones that I think, you know, rationalize in my head why I didn't finish. You know, of course, it had nothing to do with my willpower, you know. Of course, I wanted to finish, but I just couldn't. You know, there's a whole host of reasons why that didn't happen, which I'll go through here. Of course, it's the willpower. That's what makes you go and do these ridiculous distances anyway. But during the week that I had diverticulitis, I missed getting up to the 52-mile mark for the week, and that was going to be a kind of a milestone for me. And I only got 40, and then but the following weekend after I managed to get my symptoms cleared up with some antibiotics, I ended up doing a 22-miler on Saturday and then a 10-miler on Sunday. And that ended up being the week before the race, and I even did that while I was on call for work, 22-miler being after only about 4 hours of sleep, and that was just a brutal day. That was the Saturday after New Year's Day. So I actually had some confidence going into the week because I had a lot of mileage, and I had 32 miles for the weekend the week before, so I felt like I had the endurance. But that's just one component of this whole thing, and I lost sight of that, and hopefully I won't do that on March 5th then at the Mississippi 50, which is going to be another muddy race, or at least has the potential to be. But at least this time I know what my limitations are and what I'm going to be able to do and how I'm going to manage my feet, and hopefully we'll be successful at that. But that's these things are supposed to be hard, and not everybody finishes them. Oh, and one little side note here, I will say that out of the 40 or so people that showed up for this, quote, glorified group run, fat ass event, only 9 went on to do the 50K. I did get that stat before I left, so I didn't feel that bad. And I'll talk a little bit about how I kind of felt bad for holding Tom back a little bit later in the show. But Tom dropped with me, and that was his own decision. I didn't talk him into it. I told him I'd wait for him. I had some confidence going in, and then the week of the race, I did 6, 6, and 7, and that was going to set me up for right close to a 50-mile week if I did the 31 miles of the 50K. I think that math is right. 19 plus 31 is 50. So, you know, the plan was to go in and do the 50K because it was, quote, a training run, you know, a warm-up for this 50-miler that I'm doing down in Mississippi on March 5th. Well, the day started off with rain. Of course, it had been raining a good part of the week, and I knew if it rained most of the week, then the trails were going to be muddy, and the creek crossings and river crossings would be such that you'd either have to go into the water, you know, up to your ankles or your shins, or find another way to go across. And, I mean, I knew that going into it, and it rained on the way out there, and then it stopped, and actually turned out to be a pretty nice day, 60 degrees. So the weather was good. But the course itself was absolutely terrible. It was just, mud fest, mud stock, you know, whatever you want to call it, just terrible. And that's not my thing. I don't know if I've ever said that before. I'm not a big mud guy. I don't like running in the mud. I'll run in the rain on the road. I don't mind that. And it's not that I'm afraid of getting dirty. It's the way you slip and the potential of falling and getting hurt, which concerns me because I'm kind of a big guy, and when I go down, it hurts. And that happened to me on Sunday, on January 10th, which was when the race was. Yesterday, I'm recording the show on the day after when I'm recovering. I took the day off from work. I did that ahead of time just because I figured I'd be sore from running 31 miles, right? But boy, was I sore from just doing 20, because I stopped at the 35K mark. The weather was good. That's not an excuse, but the condition of the course is certainly an excuse for me. It was just absolutely terrible. There were plenty of people out there that love that stuff, and they run right through the middle of the mud. You know, a lot of us scurry around to the side, and you still sink in. And just imagine sinking in your shoes on a regular basis, not every step, but probably every 50 yards, there were sections that were at least 50 yards long, or maybe not quite that long, of mud where the mud is such where it grips your shoe and you're feeling your heel coming out. So you're running through that kind of stuff regularly, feeling the soak of the water coming in. That's not something I particularly like. I knew it was going to happen. I just did not think it would be so repeated, step after step after step after step. And it really started to kind of get to me and started working on my brain a little bit, knowing that it was just hours left of the same thing. And so around the first turnaround was at right around 10 miles, a little bit, I think it was just a hair under that. And I was already having trouble right around 10, 11, 12, right after the turnaround. That's when those negative thoughts started creeping in. I can just drop this at 35K and just bag it and learn from it and move on. And it kind of became an exercise in, well, when was I going to break that news to Tom? Because I knew I was done after doing the first leg out there. I did a sock change because what happens is your shoes get so muddy. And so there's so much mud on them that when you're actually running, you're not getting any grip on anything. So some of the declines, I was actually running down sideways, which of course uses different muscles that end up hurting later, just to get some grip. And would you know it, I actually fell in a marsh area that wasn't even a hill. And then I scraped my shin really bad and opened up and had a nice little gash on it. I don't think it needed to be stitched up. Well, it's kind of late now. But it bled quite a bit, and then I had this big little golf ball, maybe not that big, but maybe the size of a marble, swelling on the front of my shin. And I know that usually when there's swelling around the front of a bone, that's not a good thing. I didn't break it, but then I got worried about it, you know, and then I cut my other shin, and then I'm thinking, God, I'm such a wuss, and I can't handle this, and it was just a whole host of things, which I made a whole list of here. The funny thing was, was that the wet shoes was actually not a problem. You get all that mud on them, and then you go through the creek, you know, you're up to your ankles in water. There's no way to get around going in for a full soak. There's just no way. You can't jump across the things. And that washes all the mud away, but then, of course, now your feet are freaking cold as shit because the water is winter. It's winter temperature water. It's not, even though it was starting to warm up and the sun actually poked out at one point in time, you know, the water is January winter temperatures. And so you get a real good cold soak. And the funny thing about it was it was actually soothing because the heat, the moisture, the blister triangle, which is that deadly triangle, which I've talked about before, which is you got to remove one of those components. You got heat, moisture, and friction. Those are the points of that triangle. And if you remove one of those, in this case, heat, you're going to have moisture and friction, but you don't have that heat that contributes to the blistering of the skin. And I didn't have that. And when I got to the 10-mile turnaround, the first turnaround, I did a sock change, and I wear double socks whenever I'm doing these long races to help with just a little extra cushioning. Thin socks, but I always wear double socks. Plus, you never know when you might need an extra sock out in the woods, right? You can go without if you have to. So, and that felt good. Even though I knew I was going to be going back into the mud and back into the water, I knew it would, at least for my feet, it would get me to back to the 20-mile mark. And then I could do another sock change if I was going to continue on. Of course, that was the whole goal going into this. And I had a really good mental perspective going in, was that I was going to finish. I wanted to get another marathon finish. I wanted to get some experience and some training past the 20-mile mark, which is so hard to replicate. You just can't really do that in training repeatedly. Training your body how to operate, how to fuel past the 20-mile mark, you just can't run out and do that. You have to, you know, do those 20 miles and then start doing that experience after that. And I was really hoping to get one of those long runs in there, you know, way past 20 miles to know what to do, to experience it, and then to know when I get down in Mississippi for the Mississippi Trail 50, hey, it hadn't been that long ago since I was past, you know, 25 miles or past the marathon mark, and this is what happened, and this is how I'm going to handle it, and this is how I'm going to troubleshoot and handle any problems that come up. You know, I haven't gotten there, so I'm going to have to – just kind of a note to self here. I got to figure out a way to get a longer training run in somehow. And I'm not really sure how I'm going to do it. We do have a park here in the county that the trails are just like the ones at Bear Creek Lake State Park. It's called Poor Farm Park. It's a county park. I would say the descents and the ascents are a lot steeper and longer. However, the switchbacks and the constant moving around would be something that's good to replicate. Although the funny thing is the trail down in Mississippi is going to be more wet and mud and creek crossings then if it rains, I mean, if there's a period of rain, then ups and downs, because it's flat. Mississippi's flat. That's one of the reasons I picked that course. So the sock changes were ended up being no problem. The water was so cold, it really didn't. Never had any problems with blistering at all. Never had any foot problems whatsoever, which is something that, which was one of the biggest fears that I had because of the nature of the course. I just kind of figured, gosh, you know, running through all this water, running in wet shoes, running in all this mud with all this water in my shoes is just going to make my skin of my feet so soft that there's just no way, unless I do dry sock changes, that it was going to work. And it turned out to be that was a non-issue. The mental thing was the big issue. So I at one point in time, I don't remember exactly when it was. It might have been around 14 or 15 miles. I kind of turned to Tom and said, hey, man, I'm starting to think about dropping this thing at 35K. And I know he didn't see that coming because we had not had any discussions about that at all. But he could obviously see that I was struggling. And we had said we would run together. I repeatedly told him he could run on, you know, don't, because I was going through those walking periods of my whole body was sore. And it was a really weird thing that happened, and I know I'm going off on all these little tangents here as things come to mind. I'm going to talk about them because I just never really had this happen to me before. My muscles were actually sore, like sore from running while I was running, and I hadn't had that happen before. Even when I did the Quad Killer Ultras, the Sterling Gym 40-miler back in 2009, in May of 2009, which was a total quad killer because you're up in these mountains and you got these long descents. I didn't have that issue there, and so I didn't really know what was happening to me, and I didn't really have a tough week. Like I said, I'd only done 6, 6, and 7. I had Friday and Saturday off altogether. Didn't do any other activity that would have made my legs sore, like stacking wood or some other stupid stuff that I might have done and just not realized it. And it was becoming very painful, and to the point where I could not stop those pain messages. I couldn't get to some other place. We couldn't find conversation to get me out of that. I had my iPod back in my Camelback, but I never pulled it out because I kind of thought that'd be disrespectful to Tom to listen to music while, you know, running with somebody. And hindsight, I should have done that. I had my phone. I could have made some phone calls to people to, you know, gather some support or just some inspiration for anything. And I didn't do that either. I thought people would be busy and, you know, wouldn't answer. But, you know, so in hindsight, all these things that I should have done, I didn't do. And I think I'm going to be making some notes for the next time around. Because I'm one of these people that just needs a whole lot of help, I guess, you know. So the foot issues, like I said, did not it was not an issue completely. The sideways running, going down some of the hills, I just, that was just killing me. I was surprised that I had to do that. Of course, I felt bad once I dropped the news on Tom, and then he kind of said he was just going to drop with me. And then we made, you know, of course, our excuse then became, well, you know, if we stayed out there for another 2 hours, we wouldn't get home in time to watch the beginning of the Redskins-Packers game, you know. So we used that excuse as well, which was very effective because we used that at the finish and everybody laughed. But that would have been his 49th marathon. Again, not really sure if this would have been, you know, an official result. There's no medal. There was no shirt. It was, you know, glorified group run. But, you know, somebody won it. A guy named Christopher Calfee, he won it. He ran the thing quicker than anybody else. And the times were recorded at the end, and we got them in an email so we could kind of see how we did. You know, those that finished it and the names. And it allowed me to put a couple last names to some first names of the people I met, specifically Dennis, a guy out of Annapolis who came down. And then turned out he only did the 35K as well. I'm a little surprised if you drive down from another city and then you end up dropping. But, you know, he might have had his own issues. And then a guy named Ralph, who had recently done a 100-miler back in September, he ended up stepping off too at 35K. So we were in good company. Didn't make it any easier. So not really sure if that would have qualified as an official, you know, quote, marathon result, unquote. But I had, you know, the plan going in was to get the 50K finish. So the mental problems that I had, they developed well before the first turnaround. And like I said earlier, it was just a matter of time before I broke the news to Tom. And, you know, once you say it out loud, that's when it becomes a little easier to accept. And I was trying to, I was just hurting so bad. You know, my shin was throbbing. I didn't break anything. It just got hurt. It's a wound. I mean, I don't even think I even cleaned it till I got home and took a shower. You know, no problems with my feet, just muscle soreness. And, you know, why didn't I bring any aspirin? You know, I could have taken that. That could have maybe subsided for an hour, which then I could have just slogged through the last 5 miles, right? I don't know why I didn't do that. I left all my Succeed bottles. God, I did so many things wrong. I, you know, in hindsight, I'm just thinking how stupid I was. I didn't fuel early and often as I should have. I don't know. I don't know what the problem was. I'm never carrying that damn Camelback again. That's for sure. Because I think it made my back sore. I mean, my back is actually sore. And I think that's on top of being sore from when I fell, breaking my fall, which, you know, is going to make you sore. It's like being in a car accident. You're going to be sore the next day if you're an adult, if you fall. It's just the way it is. You don't bounce right up like you do in your early, you know, when you're a kid or maybe your early 20s or something, especially if you're not an athlete that's used to falling down on the ground. So the biggest thing I'm really going to take away, of course, when I got home, I had the whole afternoon and evening of self-pity. Big pity party around my house. Nobody wanted to be around me. Today, day after the race, I sat around and watched a bunch of TV, lied on the sofa, took a nap before 12 noon, which I don't think I've ever done before, and just didn't feel like doing anything at all. I watched a bunch of Premier League soccer, English Premier League soccer that I had on the DVR. Watched a little bit of news, had some lunch, and then decided in the afternoon it was kind of time to get up and do something. I tried to walk the dog, and it just wasn't, you know, I should have forced myself to walk the dog around the block, but all I could really do was get him across the street. We have this little field. It's kind of a vacant lot, back part of somebody else's lot that they haven't developed, and so it's a little bit of a field that we take the dog in, and I was like, man, you're on your own. I'm not going to be able to walk you today, Blue. I'm just not feeling it, and it's probably going to be worse tomorrow. But the day of self-pity is my self-pity party is going to be over, and I think there's a way to learn from failing, and I'm definitely going to be fueling. I got to get out and do another. I got to get out and do a 25 plus mile run somehow. I got to figure out a way to do that. I've done that in the past where I've done a one-way run where I've had my wife come pick me up, and I think I might eyeball something like that. I can't go into the 50 miler without having a big success long run past the marathon mark. So whether it's 25, 26, or 27 miles, I'm going to have to figure out a way to get out there and do something and then do some of the midweek 7-8 mile runs over at the park, which has the same kind of trails. And then on race day, I'm just going to have to deal with the mud and the water similarly how I did at Willis River, but I got to go in with a whole different attitude. And I'm wondering if maybe part of it, and of course, here's another excuse coming, is that it was not an official event with results posted, well, you know, publicly, or there was no shirt that you got that, you know, of course you can't wear the shirt unless you do the whole thing. And then if there's no, yeah, and I did do this event twice because I remember one year I had two different colored shirts. So I know I did the 35K. Oh, God, these thoughts that are coming to me now. I wonder if that plays a role, knowing that there's no medal at the end, there's no glory at the end, you just finish. But that's what some of these ultra events are. There's nothing at the end sometimes. You're just doing it for your own personal satisfaction. I just had none of that going on yesterday, and the muscle soreness during the middle of the race is the biggest thing that worried me. So I think I'm gonna have to have on my race list now is going to have to be aspirin, you know, ibuprofen in large amounts. And I think that would have helped. I wish I had taken it to at least see what it would have been, because that's not something I normally do during races. And the reason I don't bring it is because I don't have this muscle pain during the races. The pain I have during the races is just the overall body pain of running past the marathon mark. You know, your whole body's going to hurt. But this was specific to my quads, you know, shooting pain. Of course, my shin was hurting too. But it was just shooting pain from my quads, shooting those pain messages to my brain that I just couldn't get past. And so I failed at doing that, and I'm going to be better next time. Better prepared, as long as I don't forget what happened on January 10th, because I don't think I ever will. I've never had that kind of pain before so early in a race. And that's what kind of got me thinking that maybe something else was going on. But here I am today. I'm not injured, so... Well, at least I don't think I am. So I know it's not a situation where I hurt myself and then I was feeling the symptoms of that. You know, I'm going to go to work tomorrow regular and you know, perform all my duties as regular. Might be dragging a little bit here and there, getting in and out of the car, but I don't have an injury that I'm suffering from or I need to get any kind of medical care from. I guess my biggest takeaway is that I might have gone in too relaxed and got my ass kicked, because that's really what happened. I got my ass kicked over the course of 20 miles yesterday, or on January 11th, 10th, whatever it is. Today is the 11th. The race was on the 10th, the event. That's really what happened to me, and I have no problem saying that, because that's how I felt when I was done. Tom went down too once. And he said he was hurting and sore and all that. I don't know. I haven't talked to him today. I'll have to check in with him. But yeah, it was a Ashland Dave ass kicking. I have no problem saying that whatsoever. I think I kind of took for granted that my training had been going so well and I was going to go in and just take it slow and not have any trouble covering the distance, you know, at least having no trouble getting to 20 miles. And then the rest of that, you know, once you get to the marathon and after that, you're just kind of on a wing and a prayer a little bit. I didn't even get to that. And so that, it kind of hurt my feelings a little bit. I mean, to be honest with you, I just thought I'd be able to do it. I thought I was a little tougher than I was yesterday, and that's a very humbling feeling when you get your ass handed to you. I don't know if anybody out there in the listening audience has ever had their ass handed to them. I mean, truly gotten their ass kicked. whether it's, you know, in a physical fight or just through a physical exertion event. I've been on the receiving end of both of those, so I know what it's like. I've done more ass kicking, I can say, than I've had than getting my ass kicked. I will say that, but just that's on a side note with what I do. But I had my ass handed to me yesterday, and that's for sure. So we're gonna move past the 50K dismal failure. Happy DNF, everybody, and let's check out the email bag section of the show. All right, heard from Lummix, and Lummix lives up in the Annapolis area, and he found some money while he was running last week. So normally he just comes across roadkill, glass shards, and condoms, but he did find money. He found $20 in fives, and then he sent me an email talking about how would that compare if he found a stack of hundreds 4 inches high. And he said by the time he finished counting the money, he felt bad, and I don't know how long it took you, Lummix, to count $20 in fives, but normally it wouldn't take me that long. And so he thought about going and putting it on a police car's windshield, but then he thought that would be bad. And then he just decided to give it to a friend's kid. And who does that? I mean, keep the money, man. Finders keepers, losers weepers. Isn't that how it goes? Finders, keepers, losers, weepers, I think is how it goes. That carries over to adulthood, by the way. If you can't find the... I think with money, if you can't find the immediate owner, and if you look around and you're not getting punked or anything, I think it's okay to keep the money. But anyway, Lummix, I'll take a look at that documentary you mentioned, and appreciate you listening to the show, and I'll tell you all about my DNF in person next time we get together. Heard from Sandy. And she has done some incredible stuff here lately. Can't even keep up with it all. She did back-to-back marathons, First Light, and First Light Marathon in Mobile, and then Mississippi Blues Marathon in Jackson. And she said, free information, if you haven't been to Jackson, the roads are horrible. Yes, I've flown into Jackson on numerous occasions over the years, Sandy, going down to a family reunion down there. And there's no money in Mississippi, so... That's probably why it's going to be muddy in that state park when I do that Mississippi 50. You know, the good thing about that, come to think of it, it actually has a 50-kilometer option, and you'll get a finishing time for that if that's all you decide to do. I mean, of course I want to do the 50 miles, but, you know, here I am already wussing out. I guess that DNF really got to me. But anyway, Sandy's email went on about how much fun she had, made some new friends, and some other people that she hadn't seen in a while. And then, of course, she had some comments to say about glitter. And she's got a list of things that she doesn't like. One at the top of the list is glitter, but they're in no particular order. So one is glitter for obvious reasons, listening to the podcast. Two is those plastic tags that hold price tags to clothing. She says when she cuts them off, she can never find the end pieces, and then she winds up stepping on them later. Three, and this is probably the most funny, is spelling words wrong intentionally. For example, for a business name, like Cozy Cabin, K-O-Z-Y, or Jack's Car Wash, J-A-X-K-A-R Wash. She says she's not a wizard grammar, but this stuff just drives me nuts. And then she said, don't worry about armchairing quarterback to your race, because just look at that as good training run and move on. And Sandy, I really do appreciate that advice, and I'm going to definitely heed that. I heard from Neil. And Neil Richard is a guy that's been listening to the show for a long time, and I've met him a few times up at the Dahlgren 50K that's held first Saturday in August when it's, you know, 100 degrees, 100% humidity in Virginia. And he's got a real dry wit, really funny. So I'm taking this as a huge compliment that he emailed me just to say that he laughed at my Message of Peace podcast. He said, Dave, just had to stop and drop a line after listening to your annual Message of Peace podcast. Love to hear both your wife and daughter on the show, and your message on glitter was awesome. By far, one of your funniest shows, made my morning. Keep up the good work. Keep the good luck in the training. Sounds like you're making progress, even if you are wearing pink gloves. And yes, that's Neil for you. Very funny. Always like listening, getting stuff from him. And I also heard from Dr. Smitty, and He had some relatives come in from Arkansas the day after Christmas for 4 days. They had a good time, but he's looking forward to getting back to a normal schedule. A little discussion about the race dots. Those magnets are so strong. He recommended just removing one from the pack at a time. And he has not used them since the Patrick Henry half, so he's going to be using them again. It looks like in March when he does the – he's going to be doing the Shamrock half and the 8K on the same day, so that's pretty cool. And he's hoping we don't have a whole lot of snow to deal with this winter so we can get some training in. And he mentioned how I had trained in the indoor track at Randolph-Macon College, which is a tenth of a mile. I think one time I did 13 miles on that, which was just – because it was just a pouring down cold rain in a couple winters ago. It was brutal. And I had no choice. I had to get the miles in. It was pretty boring. He's hoping to pace the hour 45 group at the Dismal Swamp Stomp, which I think is in, when is that, April, I think, Dr. Smitty? I'm not sure. He says most of his runs now are at 8:45 pace, but it's not that easy. He's coming back from an injury. And Greg, it really is good to hear from you. And I know you're coming up for the railroad run. I'm having some trouble getting somebody to switch my own call for April 29th. So I'll keep you posted on that. Heard from David Down Under. And the funny thing about him, he lives down in underneath the earth there in Australia. And actually, I think he's in New Zealand. Sorry. He said he's been feeling a little jaded with his running, but hearing my Virginia brogue lightened his day. And so I had to look up what brogue is, and I hope I didn't say this in the last podcast. I might have. He said the term brogue generally refers to an Irish accent, which I don't have because I'm not fully Irish. I'm partly Irish. But it's less commonly. It also refers to certain other regional forms of English, particularly those of Scotland or in the English West Country. Now, a little-known fact is that the word brogue, that's B-R-O-G-U-E, was first recorded in 1689. So that's just a little-known fact that you're not going to get anywhere else other than this podcast and, of course, Wikipedia. So, David, good to hear from you. And it looks like one of your emails said that you, I think it was the most recent one, where you said that you had... had a big race coming up. I think it was the last show. I heard from Keith. He's 79 years old, hails out of Texas, and he gave me some really good advice on clothing, cold weather running, whatever. I think you know what I mean. And I'll be looking that up also. And of course, got that spreadsheet that Marisa sent me a little while back. So I'll be checking that stuff as it gets colder. It was kind of funny because the cold wasn't even an issue at the Willis River fat ass race or run, glorified group run, whatever you want to call it. But anyway, Keith, appreciate that. He's recommending Thorlow socks, mittens, which he says are warmer than gloves, tights, base layer, this dual fold shirt, cotton tee, windbreaker. It says the Duofold, D-U-O-F-O-L-D brand. Been doing that for 15 years and for some reason has never found anything that works as well. So I'll be checking that out at some point. And some of these other ones here are just older emails. So if you want to get in the inner circle there, what you do is you email me at ashlanddave@gmail.com. 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 And if you've been thinking about sending an email but you always forget when you get home, hey, no problem. You know, you can do it next month, next year, next week. It doesn't matter to me. I just like hearing from listeners. And if you want to send an email in, I'll respond as soon as I can. And I like, you know, funny stuff, witty stuff, you know, constructive criticism with some jokes in there. You know, if you want to make fun of me, you can. You listen to me over the years, you know I can take it. There's very few things I can take. Sometimes I do lash back a little bit, but not much. So my training will continue. I've got monster weeks continuing, 40-plus miles, 45-plus mile weeks, getting up to the 50-mile mark, which I've said before is usually my breaking point. I start noticing things happening. This happened to me, obviously, at the at Willis River, where I started breaking at 10, 11 miles into it. And I've had some time now to reflect on it, and I got some nice I got some nice feedback from some folks from Team Incognito from our Facebook group that we have on there. So, Kelly, if you listen to the show, I really appreciate it, John King. I appreciate some of your kind words. And Snuggy Bear also. And, oh, don't want to leave out Ashland Bob. He did send me a text, not an email. He sent me a text because he has my phone number. And he liked the Glitter podcast as well. He doesn't like glitter. So I really think that there's enough people out there that just stop sending glitter Christmas cards. He says he opened it up. It got all over his computer keyboard, got on his fingers. Yeah, you know, and then if you wash it down the sink, you know, and it goes to these water treatment plants, what do they do with the glitter? Does it just, I guess it gets burned at some point with all the other stuff, the solid waste or whatever they do, and they, folks that work at those places, the engineer, how to, I guess, get the water clean again. I'm not really, don't need to know, go into that right now. I'm not really sure how it all works. But, yeah, ashlanddave@gmail.com if you want to comment on the show. I love hearing from listeners. And I'll continue with the training right up to the March 5th 50-miler down in Mississippi. And, of course, we'll have a full report from that, regardless of how I perform that day. So, thanks for downloading the show. This is Ashland Dave, and I am running in the center of the universe, Ashland, Virginia, reminding you to run to the finish, keep on running, don't forget to hug your kids, and y'all have a good week. God, isn't that music from Derek Miller just too cool? You can check out more of his stuff. He's deceased now, unfortunately, but you can check out more of his stuff if you go to ashlanddave.podbean.com. You can link every show that I do has his sound effects in it, and so I always give him credit in the show, and you can just link to his page from there and check out more of his music. It's pretty cool. He does it all in GarageBand. It's all electronic. He left us too early, but it's just really cool music. That's why I wanted that one to play out. Y'all take care.